Hey, good morning. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host in today for Michael Slate. This is Samsara Taylor. I'm a big fan of Michael Slate. I'm very pleased and honored to be standing in for him as we ease our way into this show. And before I tell you all of what we're going to share with you, I want to highlight right up front a voice of a courageous, very truth-possessed 12-year-old young girl whose whole future is on the line, speaking truth to power. Let's start with her. She's in West Virginia. This is Addison Gardner testifying against a very vicious anti-abortion restriction that was on the ballot. Let's put it that way. Yes, she was 12 years old. She wore a green bandana on her head, the color of the international green wave out of Latin America, standing up for abortion rights, to legalize abortion in Latin America. And now it's been taken up in this country by many standing up against the recent overturning of abortion rights nationwide in this country and the fight to defend abortion on demand and without apology, legal abortion nationwide now. Okay, here we go. This is Addison Gardner.
I'm 12 years old. I attend Buffalo Middle School. I play for varsity volleyball and I run track. My education is very important to me and I plan on doing great things in life. If a man decides that I'm an object and does unspeakable and tragic things to me, am I a child supposed to carry and birth another child? Am I to put my body through the physical trauma of pregnancy? Am I to suffer the mental implications? A child who had no say in what was being done with my body. Some here say they are pro-life. What about my life? Does my life not matter to you?
All right, that was Addison Gardner, 12 years old, standing up courageously. Oh man, I get choked up listening to it. You should see the video. Like I said, my name is Samsara Taylor, and I'm not only a big fan of Michael Slate and honored to stand in for him today on this edition of the Michael Slate Show. I want to let you know that I am the co-host of the Revolution Nothing Less Show on YouTube at youtube.com/therevcoms. Today, we are going to bring you a few very special interviews and segments. We're going to start the hour off with a very deep interview with Jim Forat, who is a longtime gay rights activist, freedom fighter, multi-issued, concerned with all of humanity. He was politicized back in San Francisco in the 60s with the hippies, then the diggers and the Black Panthers. He'll tell you about it. And he has been a very active part of the movement Rise Up for Abortion Rights, which I am a co-initiator of together with others, and has been out really on the forefront of leading people to stand up and fight against the overturning of Roe versus Wade, the overturning of abortion rights nationwide for the whole six-month period between when the Supreme Court first heard the case back in December and in June when they finally decided the case and overturned abortion rights nationwide, and continuing to today. And Jim Forat has been a part of that. And recently, if you've been listening to this show, or maybe you've seen it on the internet in different ways, there have been a whole campaign of very scurrilous, unprincipled, dishonest, and dangerous attacks against Rise Up for Abortion Rights from some among the so-called left that have been amplified and sensationalized in the media against Rise Up for Abortion Rights and against the role of the RevComs, that is the Revolutionary Communists, within that movement, myself as a key figure, as well as Bob Avakian, the leader of the Movement for Revolution, the architect of the new communism. And so all of that is on the table in this interview that we'll bring you to start off the hour. It was conducted by Andy Z, who is the host of the Revolution Nothing Less Show, and it's deep and is wide-ranging. So we'll get to that. Later, we're going to take a look way back in time, way out into space. We're going to have a special segment that was put together also by the Revolution Nothing Less Show with Noche Diaz, the spokesperson for the national spokesperson for the Revolution Clubs, talking about the James Webb Telescope and the extraordinary pictures, seeing back 13 billion years in time, way to the outer edges of the universe, almost to the 13.8 billion years back to the Big Bang. And it's just opening up new vistas for human understanding and imagination and exploration. And so I think that's an astounding accomplishment, a lot to appreciate and learn from. And so we'll bring you that later in the hour. It's beautiful. We'll have a few other things along the way. And with that, let's dive into our first segment. This is Andy Z interviewing Jim Forat, longtime gay rights activist and participant in Rise Up for Abortion Rights. Thank you.
All right. I'm very pleased to have a longtime friend and revolutionary and political activist, Jim Forat. He's a history maker. He's been a club entrepreneur, a professional actor, a pop culture critic, a writer, a political activist his entire life. He was one of the people and among the people who founded the Yippies. He's worked with prominent musicians in the 60s. I first met Jim in the late 1970s when he was running one after another of the really cutting edge nightclubs in New York, where he introduced many of the radical artists of that time. And very importantly, Jim was not just present at, but was a participant in the Stonewall Rebellion, which really lofted gay and lesbian rights onto the front pages of the paper and started a movement. He was imprisoned in Texas for a year for his advocacy for gay people. Jim's outspoken. He's not going to mince words. He doesn't do that to curry favor, but he calls things as he sees them. I have counted him as a friend of Revolution Books over the last several decades, and he was very active in Rise Up for Abortion Rights. Rise Up for Abortion Rights and has been under serious attack, as we've covered on the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show. A lot of this attack has been aimed at the RevComs and Bob Avakian in particular, and in classic anti-communist COINTELPRO form, they've been attacking Rise Up for association. This is just one of the most time-honored or time-dishonored reactionary traditions in this country and around the world. And we had a Zoom call where we got into a lot of this, in which Jim Forat spoke at one point. He had a lot to say, and I wanted him on the show where we could see him in person and really get into these questions. Well, Jim on the Zoom call began with talking about his experience in the Bay Area. So I thought maybe we could start there, Jim. But first of all, welcome to the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show.
My pleasure. Indeed, okay. My pleasure. You know, the Bay Area in the late 60s, or the middle to late 60s, was the place to be. You know, if you were a white working class kid like myself, you know, I wanted to change the world. And I thought that hippies had a way of doing it. I discovered that hippies had no politics that I could understand. But while living in San Francisco and living in the hate, I became aware of the diggers. I sort of joined up with them and helped serve the food and talk to people about making a better world. And then I discovered the Black Panther Party. And the Black Panther Party had an incredible effect upon me, because I saw people really taking A, control of their own lives, and B, building community and caring about each other and helping people to educate themselves about how change is made and making sure that they had a full stomach, that the kids had its education in school, and that family, all kinds of families, were respected, including my tribe. Huey P. Newton was the first person to ever come out on the left to say, don't judge a homosexual on their sexual practices, judge them on their practice, their political practice. And that's always been the litmus for me. It was a lesson well learned at that time. Stop with the personal battles, but look at the practice of the people you're working with and either try to change it if it's not what you want, or start something different. So the Bay Area had a very big influence on me. There was a white guy that was very young and outspoken and shared the stage with the Panthers a number of times so that I went to a rally or a demonstration. And that was Bob Avakian. We were both young then. We were both idealistic. And I think we're both, you know, old now, and we're still idealistic about making a better world possible, because this doesn't work. And that's why I was attracted to the Revolutionary Bookstore. I used to hang out there when it was Midtown in Manhattan. And then when it moved up to Harlem, I would go up there. And I had a couple of really good friends. And we would sit and talk about politics. And I love the fact that they never tried to convert me. You know, we had conversations, we dialectical discussions, which is so hard to have any place today because of the education system and tech and social media, et cetera, et cetera. But I have very fond memories for a very long time of that political movement. In the early 70s, the Gay Liberation Front, which was the first group to come out of the Stonewall Rebellion, and thank you for recognizing it for what it was a rebellion against oppression. The Gay Liberation Front's politics were multi-issue. And that's what attracted us to the Black Panther Party. We went to the People's Revolutionary Constitutional Convention. And when Bobby Seale was on trial, there was a big demonstration at Yale, and we went as a group and asked and then demanded to have a speaker. I became that speaker. And that's when I began my relationship with Comey Tell Pro, by the way. When Rise Up for Abortion Rights, you know, they always had a sense of doing provocative actions that were had very serious meaning to them. What happened because of the success of Rise Up for Abortion Rights, to me, it was the green was everywhere. The signs were everywhere. When they first started, there wasn't much traction in getting people into the street, but Sincera Taylor does not give up. A good lesson. You pick yourself up and you go forward. And gradually it built. And the emphasis on talking to kids, young people in high school and in college, was very important, I can see, in the organizing of it. Because these were kids who did not know what it was like to not be able to they lived in a world where abortion was legal. Women had the right to control their bodies. And when I spoke in front of St. Patrick's at a Rise Up for Abortion Rights rally, I talked about what it was like and how I had my own personal experience of learning of the nightmare of abortions when a friend of mine who lived in my building died from a botched abortion right in front of my eyes. I've never forgotten it. And that is so important. You know, some of this criticism that's been going on about why do they have a hangar? You know, the big hangar that is you can see in some of the demonstration. Or why do they have bloody pants on? I was astounded that Rise Up for Abortion Rights was being criticized for talking about what it's like not to have legal, safe abortions. The reason we showed those things and talked about those things, because we knew that women, particularly poor women, regardless of their ethnics or race, could not afford to get a safe abortion. And the deaths were all over the place. I never forgot my friend dying in that bathtub full of bloody water because she hemorrhaged to death from a botched abortion. And I had so much respect for the Rise Up for Abortion Rights organizers bringing in Eve, you know, for the monologues, the vagina monologues, who gave a great speech about patriarchy at one of the rallies, and really doing the outreach to minority women, you know, making sure that representation was seen both on the speeches platform and in the presence of the demonstration. You know, there was a woman from San Antonio, a domestic worker, and she might've been around my age, and she blew me away with the integrity of her finally releasing the stories that she had held inside of herself for 50 years. That's what Rise Up for Abortion Rights was able to accomplish. And green was everywhere when that became the theme of the demonstrations. And they became too successful. The attacks on them shocked me. But then I remembered what Comey Tell Pro was like. after I spoke at Yale at that rally, I became one of the white people, and I'm alive because I think I'm one of the white people that Comitopro went after. And what they would do is they would make these incredible behind your back rumors and, you know, just say awful things about me and other people and try to build dissension within the group. And I am just glad to see that Rise Up for Abortion Rights has not, you know, they blinked an eye and probably, I'm sure Sincero got pissed off, but just went forward with the correctness of telling the Supreme Court, no, you cannot enslave women in this way. When you take away their power to control their body, and then I realized it also affected me as a gay man. And we've seen it, you know, from Justice Thomas and Ted Cruz, et cetera. You know, we may be next on the chopping block.
All right, so that was the voice of Jim Forat. He is, as he was introduced there by Andy Z, a longtime gay rights activist, but also somebody who has been involved in multiple battles against oppression, for justice, for a better world, and most recently has been a real stalwart part of Rise Up for Abortion Rights and bringing his historical experience and his principle to bear in speaking out against the vicious attacks that have been waged against Rise Up for Abortion Rights and against BA and the RevComs. He mentioned me a few times there, Sansara Taylor. I am here today happily being Michael Slate's guest host on this special broadcast of the Michael Slate Show. He also mentioned a couple other things I want to just make sure everybody is familiar with. But he was mentioning COINTELPRO, which was the counterintelligence program of the FBI. It was a vicious program that monitored, spied on, and tried to sow dissension among and set up, and in some cases led to the deaths or the murders of revolutionaries, freedom fighters, activists in the 60s and 70s. It was exposed, and there are tremendous lessons, including what he was bringing to bear about combating the culture of rumors and snark and getting things up on the level of politics and principle and program and understanding of problem and solution and forging unity in the struggle against oppression. There's other things he mentioned. Araceli Herrera is the domestic worker he mentioned who came up and has been a stalwart part of Rise Up for Abortion Rights as well. And she had the courage multiple times to tell the story that she had kept secret for decades and decades of being almost the exact experience that Addison, the 12-year-old, testified about hypothetically in the beginning about being a child who was raped. But for Araceli, this happened to her when she was a teenager. She was forced to drop out of school. She found herself pregnant because of this rape. It was actually a gang rape. She didn't even know which rapist the pregnancy came from. And she was forced to carry this to term, and it changed her whole life. She had a son. She couldn't tell him for decades who his father was or even the circumstance. She had so much shame. She was driven from her homeland. She worked in the shadows in Texas as a domestic worker and kept this secret for many, many years and put this before the world as part of the Rise Up for Abortion Rights movement and the fight against the overturning of abortion rights in this country. And before we get back into the interview with Jim Forat and Andy Z, I want to share with you a song. It's a song that I never really listened to the lyrics of totally. I mean, the chorus, you can't miss it. But I went back and read it after one of these Trumpian anti-abortion candidates used this song online. And the lead singer of it wrote back on Twitter. Twisted Sister Dee Snider wrote back on Twitter to Carrie Lake, who had pushed this song out. Hey, idiots, read its first line. We've got the right to choose. This is a pro-choice anthem you are co-opting. It was never intended for you fascist morons. As the songwriter and singer, I denounce everything Carrie Lake stands for. Write your own damn song. So you know how the fascist Republicans always like to pose like they're the oppressed and they're the victims. And so they had tried to appropriate this song, and Dee Snider said, no way, you fascist morons. So we're going to play it in tribute.
We're not gonna take it anymore.
So there we have it. No, we ain't gonna take it. It's a pro-choice anthem. I have to read it again. Dee Snider wrote. I just love it. Hey, idiots, read the first line. We've got the right to choose. This is a pro-choice anthem you are co-opting. It was never intended for you fascist morons. Write your own damn song, Carrie Lake. So with that, let's jump back into our interview with Jim Foret, talking to Andy Z.
Very bad place where we're at right now, where overall there's a cancel culture, accusation is as good as guilt, and there isn't the kind of sense and the spirit of what you're talking about of, you know, when you say a dialectical discussion means a discussion based on reality and looking at the contradictions within it, and then we can argue about it. We can argue about what's the most important part of the Black Panther Party. What did they do? Why were they defeated? These are important questions to get into. But it's not a matter of constantly slicing things off to the point where there is nobody willing to actually stand up.
I am willing, and I've always been willing. And this is where culture comes in. One of the things I did in the nightclub scene is I brought people from Harlem downtown into the white neighborhood, into the club lands, Afrika Bambaataa and the Zulu Nation. I had Afrika Bambaataa spin with my DJ, Mark Tamans. And then we gave him a night where all of his tribe came down. And the B-boys that a woman named Blue brought into nightlife. You had on the dance floor people that would never be that close to each other, were probably frightened of each other on both sides of the racial issue, but the beat of a good DJ had them dancing together and having fun and lowering the tension that racism and fear put into a room. We have to acknowledge that those things exist, but we have to, through practice, show there is a different way. And I think Baba Bakian talks about that in his writings in a very clear, scientific manner. And I'm disappointed that those that are raising the critical voices and using words like cult, come on. I thought one of the American principles was the freedom of speech and the right to think for yourself and to say it without hurting anybody else. These are dangerous, dangerous times because fascism is everywhere.
Well, Jim, I think, look, we've covered a lot of ground, and this is important. It's, you know, we're at a very crucial moment. You spoke of the Supreme Court being a fascist Supreme Court. You spoke of the danger of fascism. And we talked about the overturning of the right to abortion as part of that. And then we spoke quite a bit about these attacks, cult and all of this, and this culture of accusation and using words that of division and mystical things, the scary cult, which is just a form of neo-McCarthyism. And we have to recognize that when this fascist movement, as people know, has no relationship to the truth. In fact, it's a constant destroying of any objective criteria. A problem we have is that on the left now, there's that same, in this wokeness and cancel culture and identity politics, is the same thing going on epistemologically. And this is something that poses a tremendous danger, and it is leading people away from finding out about how the world really works, engaging different theories, engaging revolution, and that's a struggle. Revolution is not something that just you, myself, all of us, we were provoked by the actions of revolutionaries to then go in and say, well, what do they actually have to say? And people moved from saying, well, this is the Vietnam War, for example, was a wrong policy, or you know, it's bad to have segregation, to seeing, oh, wait a second, white supremacy is built into the country, or this war is a product of the system. These are things that come through the actions of people in the street, driving them to look more deeply into why the world is the way it is and what needs to be done and what kind of values that you have been speaking of quite a bit and marks a lot of your life, the kind of values that you develop on the basis of how you understand the world. So I do really appreciate the interview. If you want to have a last word, go for it.
Rise up for abortion rights must not be silenced. And be aware of these people who call themselves street journalists. Who are they? What is their background? What is their education? And what do they know about the reality of the world that we actually live in? I was very offended by the woman that this so-called street journalist who took great pride in calling it, Rise Up for Abortion Rights and the RCP as a money-making machine. Come on. Some of the criticism that came out of the groups that criticized were worried about money. One actually said, they're taking money away from us. What does that money go to? The green stickers, the posters. I'm very sensitive about this as a conscious working class person. Who's making the money? Who's taking the money? I have to tell you, I am not suspicious of where the money that is raised goes and Rise Up for Abortion Rights or in the RCP. This program and programs like this are critical in this particular moment to wake up people and try to, that's almost like a cha-cha-cha. No, seriously, try to get people to think and ask questions and say, I don't understand this. That's what I like about Avakian's writing. Whether I agree with every single sentence is not important. It's clear. It's scientific. It's not subjective. It's about reality. It's about capital. It's about our lives and having not even the freedom to be. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry, Jim. No, that's, I think it's very important and people need to hear it. They need to hear it over and over again because they're literally drowned in a cesspool of just a putrid culture and innuendo and accusation. And so look, I look forward.
No, Andy, one more point. I was very upset when I heard a woman, I don't know what her race was, calling out Rise Up for Abortion for using the word enslavement. I'm sorry, do you know what, people have to think about what enslavement means. It means someone dominating someone else. And yes, there's racial parts of that, but that's not only the way enslaved. And when you take away a person's power to control their own life and you say, I have the power to tell you what to do and can't do, which is what the Supreme Court did, that is, for me, what enslavement is. You obey or you're in deep, deep trouble. And we're seeing that in the states with the laws that are being passed. So don't, please, friends, don't be afraid to say, wait a minute, what are you talking about? These trigger words that people use to try to change the subject or guilt trip or make people feel guilty. No, talk it out.
Well, Jim, thank you for this interview, and I look forward to more conversations, and at some point we'll see you again at Revolution Books in New York City. If you get yourself out here to Los Angeles, we'll have you come right in the studio and talk some more. Okay, be well.
Thank you, Andy.
Take care.
All right, so that was Andy Z in conversation with Jim Forat. It was a segment on last night's new episode of the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show, and you are listening to the Michael Slate Show. And I'm so happy that you are with us in this beautiful sunny morning. I am happy to be with you. My name is Samsara Taylor, and I am guest hosting for Michael Slate today.
I think it might rain today. Ash on the ground. took all the heat we could take and then burn it down. Now it's a real parade. We're all welcome now. As long as you feel afraid, that's what it's about. You can call me irrelevant, insignificant. You can try to make me small. I'll be your heretic, you fucking hypocrite. I won't think of you at all. Sticks and stones and all that shit. Does Jesus love the ignorant? I like to think he'd gladly take us all. The kids are not all right. None of us are right. I'm tired, but I won't sleep tonight. Just to feel alive. The kids are not alright. None of us are right. I'm tired, but I won't sleep tonight. Just to feel alive. I can't tell the difference.
Next, we want to continue forward with our program. We have a great segment that's looking into this distance, the distance of time and the distance of space and the universe. Hopefully almost all of you have had a chance by now to see the extraordinary photographs taken from the James Webb telescope that go deep, 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 far, far, far into the past and into outer space. If you haven't, you're going to definitely want to look at them as soon as you are done hearing this segment, or maybe while you listen to it. And if you have, you're going to want to look at them again, because you are going to have a deeper appreciation for what you're seeing. So with that, let's go to Noche Diaz talking about the James Webb Space Telescope.
People look at what religion calls the heavens. They look at the stars, the galaxies. They can see a small part of the vastness of the universe, and they can imagine the greater vastness of the universe. Or they can look on a small scale. Look with a microscope and see a small microbe or whatever, and be amazed by what goes on internally within that. They can ponder the relation between what you can see with a microscope and what you can see with a telescope. This is an essential quality of human beings. Human beings will always strive for this. Far from trying to suppress this or failing to recognize it, we can and should and will give much fuller expression to it. Bob Avakian, Basics 430. In this segment, we want to share the awe and wonder of scientific discovery. I'll be drawing from a letter to revcom.us titled, The James Webb Space Telescope, Galaxies at the Edge of Time, Appreciative Reflections from a Reader. The James Webb Space Telescope is the world's most powerful telescope, and it has just recently released its first five images. The Deep Field Galaxy Cluster of SMACS-0723. The Atmospheric Signatures in WASP-96b. The dual imaging of the Southern Ring Nebula, the five galaxies of Stefan's Quartet, and the star-forming region dubbed Cosmic Cliffs of the Carina Nebula. Assembling the images itself was a great feat of human endeavor, with the largest of these, Stefan's Quartet, required the knitting together of 1,000 different photos taken by this telescope to weave a complex tapestry of what we are newly learning about the universe. In a viral TikTok, Neil deGrasse Tyson, the astrophysicist, was gushing and beaming, responding to the first images released by the telescope.
Oh my gosh! The first image from the James Webb Space Telescope! And here it is! Galaxies to the edge of time! Oh my gosh!
Oh my gosh! Galaxies at the edge of time, he said. For not only are these images giving us a look at distant places in space, but due to the nature of images recording light that has traveled for billions of years, it means we are also taking a glimpse into a distant point in time. The images capture light traveling from over 13 billion light years away. That's 13 billion years in the past, and astonishingly close to the theorized 13.8 billion years ago when the Big Bang, which first formed the universe as we know it today, is thought to have taken place. images of the sparks and swirls, the massive collisions and the emissions of gas and dust, all give us beginnings of new insight into the earliest stirrings of the universe, which would shape the formation of everything, including us. Look at the photo that Tyson was reacting to. Nearly everything in the image is a galaxy, a group of stars held together by gravity. Each of the galaxies contain roughly hundreds of billions of stars. Astronomers have said that a grain of sand held at an arm's length against the night sky would cover an area roughly the size of what is captured in this picture. Another picture they released, the Southern Ring Nebula, shows two views of a star which has exploded and is sending waves of dust and gas into space. Almost all of the elements that make up our world, like carbon and oxygen, are produced inside the nuclear furnace of stars and are sent out in explosions like this and in other ways. This then lays the basis for a more complex universe, including life itself. The Webb telescope will greatly expand our understanding of how all this happened, and also promises breakthroughs in the search for life outside our planet. All of this is a very big deal. A key dimension of Bob Avakian's new communism is the relationship between the search for truth and getting to communism, a world beyond exploitation, oppression, and antagonistic social divisions. In this context, he has emphasized the importance of seeking the truth about reality in a sweeping way, not just what is immediately necessary or useful, but part of the rich and multifaceted process that needs to characterize the world historic transition to communism. He said it like this, quote, "There is a whole thing being missed if truth is approached in a narrow and utilitarian way. If somebody discovers something about the Big Bang, that will be interesting and exciting. Truths are important just for what they are, because that's the kind of world we want to get to. For what they are. Human beings do need to be amazed. You don't need religion to realize or appreciate that. In the motion of the material world and the interaction of human beings with the rest of reality, mysteries get resolved and new mysteries emerge. Why wouldn't someone with broadness of mind be interested in questions of cosmology in their own right? Cosmology refers to the science and philosophy of the origins and development of the universe." And Bob Avakian said this in Intoxicated with the Truth. This telescope is a huge advance in humanity's ability to see and understand the universe. The five images released by the scientists running the Webb telescope give a preview of the kinds of things that this telescope will be working on in the years to come. Go to revcom.us to read the letter of appreciation in full and to get a better sense of how this telescope does what it does. This thing is a product of 30 years of work by over 20,000 scientists, engineers, and others from 14 different countries. All this underscores the fact that science is a collective enterprise. It should know no borders, and it is precious for and belongs to humanity. So we have to note and condemn the ways in which some NASA officials and U.S. government representatives cynically try to claim this major collective human accomplishment as testament to the greatness of the American empire. Some scientists have rightly called out the naming of the telescope after James Webb, who was the first head of NASA with a sordid past that includes developing methods of psychological warfare for the U.S. State Department and purging its ranks of LGBT employees. And the U.S. President, Joe Biden, pitifully proclaimed that, quote,
"These images are going to remind the world that America can do big things, and they remind the American people, especially our children, that there's nothing beyond our capacity, nothing beyond our capacity."
This is remarkably ignorant, given the amount of worldwide collective human knowledge and work that went into the telescope itself. And it rings especially hollow, given that Joe Biden is the chief representative of a profit-driven, capitalist imperialist system which struggles to see anything beyond the edge of its own nose. So with all that, it's worth thinking about the fact that even confined in a society and world like this one, where the capitalist imperialist system overall distorts, mangles, and suppresses truth, science, and the scientific method, while also keeping this scientific knowledge from vast sections of humanity. Even with all that, something like this telescope can be brought forward. In contrast, think about how this points to the unprecedented and yet unimaginable potential of what could really be brought forward in a society and world which does not do this. As another example of the precious, far-seeing, scientific leadership that humanity needs and has, Bob Avakian puts it this way. Communism will not put an end to nor somehow involve the suppression of awe and wonder, the imagination, and the need to be amazed. On the contrary, it will give much greater and increasing scope to this. It will give flight on a much grander scale to the imagination, in dialectical relation with and in an overall sense as part of a systematic and comprehensive scientific outlook and method for comprehending and transforming reality. Bob Avakian, Basics 430.
All right, and that was Noche Diaz. He is the national spokesperson for the Revolution Clubs. And I love to think about that. 30 years, 20,000 scientists all working together to open up and deepen our ability to look into history, look into space and time, look into the outer edges of the universe. It's extraordinary. I hope that that was as captivating and awe-inspiring to you as it was to me, and that you will go and look anew at the photographs that have come back so far from the James Webb Space Telescope. There are more to come. It's so exhilarating to learn about our place in this universe, and then to get perspective and to recognize we don't need make-believe myths of gods or higher powers to be amazed. We can understand the world as it is and explore it, and it's awesome.
And many people say we need religion to be able to endure, to survive, to keep from going crazy, to continue to struggle on, even to have some moments of joy and glimmers of hope in a world full of so much cruelty and brutality, heartbreak and heartlessness. But what if the world doesn't have to be this way? What if we could live in a world where never again would a parent have to fear for the life of their child just because of the color of their skin? What if we lived in a world where never again would that soul-wrenching experience that never leaves of having to bury your own child whose life was stolen by a brutal thug with a gun and the backing of the powers that be? What if being black no longer meant living in a white supremacist society that continually assaults you in your very being and very sense of worth, constantly subjects you to terror, openly or in more subtle ways, and forces you to face the constant danger that you or your children will have your life snuffed out at any moment for doing nothing but being? What if your humanity really mattered and were considered precious? What if this were true of all people of color and of immigrants? What, in fact, if all people were just people of different colors, and there were no distinctions and discrimination and persecution and brutality based on what nationality or race you were? What if there were no such thing as immigrants? What if we all lived in a world community of human beings without borders and tanks and guns and planes to enforce them? What if if women could walk down the street and look every man they encounter straight in the eye and fear nothing and not be made to feel. And not be made to feel that you're on display and to be evaluated by how you sexually titillate them. What if no more women were ever again battered, raped, assaulted, denied the right to control their own bodies? What if people who were different in their sexual orientation or just in the way they went through life, instead of being discriminated against and bullied, were valued for their difference? If that were seen as part of the great diversity of humanity? What if there were no more one part of society exploiting the others, and those exploited had no choice but to enrich them in order to be able to live themselves, working their whole life away under conditions of this ruthless exploitation? What if we didn't have to live in a lopsided world where a small number in a small number of countries have accumulate tremendous wealth by exploiting the great majority, and the conditions of the great majority are desperate? Look at the world. Look at the phenomenon of Ebola. There's been a lot of concern about Ebola, rightly so, but way too much hysterical fear about whether a few people here might get Ebola, and not nearly enough concern about what is happening to the people in Africa. What if there were no more wars for domination and plunder? What if there were whole different relations among people, valuing each other's humanity? What if there were different relations to the environment, protecting it and providing for future generations instead of despoiling and ruining it? What if we could have a whole different outlook on life and on the future instead of one of dread and one of desperately striving just to make it? Now, to paraphrase John Lennon's song, Imagine, you may say I'm a dreamer, but this is not just a dream. It is something for which there is a definite basis in reality, and it is up to us, together with people throughout the world, to make it a reality. But to make this a reality, we need to understand things as they actually are and as they actually could be. We need a scientific method and approach to life and to our struggle.
One last time, my name is Sansara Taylor. It has been an honor to spend the hour with you. I thank you for tuning in. If you want to hear more from me and from the RevComs, I invite you and I urge you to check out the YouTube show, youtube.com/TheRevComs. It's the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show, broadcasting every Thursday and available all week. And I want to thank Gary Baca, our engineer today, and our assistant producer, Henry Carson. And to remind you that the problem is not human nature, it is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. We'll talk to you next week. Nothing you do can stop the movement. We want-